There are two things I'd like you to think about why I'm speaking. One is, Scripture is filled with really, you can go at random in Scripture and find passages where the Lord speaks to our disgrace. So it's easy to find passages. My question is, what persuades you that Jesus says to you, come? What persuades you that he actually loves you? And if you're doing well in your life and you're being obedient to Jesus, so you love people who are lovable, that doesn't count. It's not the right answer. So what has been helpful for you? Is there a story in Scripture that has captured your heart? How do you choose what Scripture to offer to another person? Just because you offer it to them doesn't mean they're going to receive it, but one of the best things to offer is what has been good for your own heart. That's what you give to another person. So that's one question I would like to ask. When in your own worthlessness and poverty and sense of disgrace and unworthiness and unlovableness, what does the Spirit use for you? We're not interested in just knowing the right answer. We're interested in knowing what brings life to your very soul. So that's one question. The other question, I think I'll make time for this. What has been most helpful? What has been most helpful? For you, perhaps, if you've struggled with things, for you as you've tried to help other people, what has been most helpful? That's not me trying to avoid your questions. It's us trying to learn from each other. So keep those two things in mind. So that first question, what has been helpful for you in your midst of your own sort of self-loathing? Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. I don't know what's helpful for me. I hate to say it, but I suspect the mere accumulation of the words that God says to us has been helpful. Or story after story after story, at some point you say, Uncle, I give up. Maybe for me, it's finally being persuaded you really do love, and you don't do it begrudgingly. Because another thing I would sometimes say to my wife is, I realize these things are sort of silly, but you're revealing some kind of truth. I would say, I hope I get visiting rights in heaven because you're going to be in this different area code than me. And I hope at least I get to see you every once in a while. And I think my image for a number of years, when I see Jesus face to face, it would be sort of rolling his eyes and say, well, you're in on a technicality. If it was up to me, I don't think so. I'd say those things and sort of laugh about them, but recognizing there is something that falls short of Hebrews' confidence. We have confidence to draw near. There's something that falls short, and I better have more than that. What has been helpful? The accumulation of stories, responding to them, yes, Lord, I believe, actually saying it rather than just saying, okay, I understand it. And believing that this is who God is. Can I put it this way? He likes to come near. It is for him not to come near, it's against his nature in some ways. It is natural for him. He is love. This is what he does. I am a hugger at heart, and at some point I was going to hug my future son-in-law because it just couldn't help but do such a thing. So what helps you? You understand what we're looking for. Excuse me for this other story, but Dave Powelson, some of you know Dave, is a dear friend, and he was doing I was thinking about this last night. He was doing something on the Psalms, and I was speaking to him the day before he was going to do it, and he spoke about four Psalms that were his Psalms he was going to speak of. But my thought was, that doesn't seem like a lot of Psalms that are yours. It's a big psalter. Only four of them are yours. I didn't say it. But I did go home that night. It wasn't a competition. It got me thinking, what psalms were mine? And I went through the Psalter, and I found I liked all the psalms, but none of them were mine. Like a life verse, like these are the expressions of my own soul. That's what we want. Okay? We don't want to know the psalms. We want which one is yours. That's what you want to offer. And you are not going to give up to the person you're speaking to until something, if it's not that, it's got to be something else, but until they have confidence in what Christ has done. No confidence in themselves, but utter confidence that he delights to invite people into the sanctuary. He delights to have the court curtain absolutely torn apart and for you to enter in. In a somewhat similar way, that the people who come to our house and don't knock on the door and just come in, I really like it. It's like there's something more familiar. Yeah, they're my people, and they feel like I am their people as well. So think about that question. Let me give you at least a story that shows the what's actually happened when the Lord speaks of his love. It's just that short little story in Luke chapter 8, I think it is. In Luke 8 and 9, there is this like this compact sort of, or 7 and 8, there's this compact expression of Jesus coming to the outcasts. You have the sinful woman, the woman who was known by her sins. We all sin, but that doesn't mean we're known by her sins. She was publicly known by her sins. You have the widow of Nain and Jesus touching the dead body and raising the dead body. There are a few other stories like that, but tucked in it is this little parenthetical. It's an important one. Jesus is ministering, and there is a woman with bleeding who, this is important, she gets him. She gets him. In small areas like Israel was in those days, everybody's talking. You get the rumors of this guy who's coming. And the rumors are he looks at the people. He sees the people who are unseen. He touched the person blind. His face, the hands all over the guy. He comes close. And he doesn't reject. He treats you as his people. So there's this rumor going around. That's important for you. Because here's a person who is a true outcast. It wasn't because of what she was done. It was what happened to her, the bleeding that she had. She was perpetually unclean. No doubt she lost spouse and family as a result. She gets him. So the fact that she is moving toward Jesus, hopefully surreptitiously, like an unclean person can do such a thing. She doesn't even need to get his attention. All she needs to do is get close, that's all. She heard it. Come near. She heard that, and she responded. So, by the way, all of a sudden you see, who are the heroes in the New Testament? These are the heroes in the New Testament. She comes close, and I could just touch the hem of his garment. And then for us, Jesus stops and calls attention to what happened. And it is one of the most compact and beautiful expressions of the gospel. Here are the details. That you know, what you know is that when you touch somebody and you're unclean, that other person becomes unclean. So it was a pretty cheeky thing to do, to be an unclean person and touch this. But she knew other unclean people were coming and touching him. So somehow there was a boldness from the word of his love that was spreading. Now there are some details here. She touched Jesus. And what happened? Magic? Just healing? It doesn't happen that way. She had true uncleanness. And you don't just sort of, voila,